What lies behind Africa's lack of access to unreliable power supply? We're going to talk about that next with Peter Pienaar out in Michigan in the United States. Dr. Zakes is giving me some information as well about the largest uranium program that we have in South Africa. And if you care to follow us, and I am Thabo Mdluli, I am retweeting some of that information. He's saying South Africa is one of the largest uranium deposits in the world, the best nuclear expertise in the African continent. He's saying this is the story that they don't want you to hear. And they are scaring this government into not telling you this story. I wonder what you make of that. Do go check that out and give me your response. 0861-987-000. 0861-987-000. Tweets at I am Thabo Mdluli. Peter Pienaar speaks to us next.
Power to you who envision a South Africa alive. To you have your ear to the ground of this golden plateau. Immersed in conversations that are yet to be heard. To you who realize and materialize all that can possibly be done under the South African sun. You who won't give up until what's right is done. The time has come to dial into a frequency that allows you to really be you. To you we say power. Power 98.7. Now we're talking. Power Zone with Thabo Mdluli on Power 98.7.
All right, then we'll close off the show with a conversation that went on between Iman Rapeti earlier on. Let me get to my notes here. This is of course with regards to the weekend. Both the US and the UK warned their citizens about the possible terror attacks in South Africa, and malls in Johannesburg and Cape Town thought to be the likely targets. And of course, there's been this high alert, I'm told, at the highest level, and there is cooperation there at the highest level. But however, it is beginning to trickle down into these malls with security being beefed up a little bit. And I wonder if you have noticed any of that. So we'll look at that conversation, touching on some of the vulnerabilities and which areas pose much threat. Is South Africa a cooling off zone for terrorists? These are some of the questions that were posed to the guest, and Iman was handling that one. So that is what we're going to close the show with this morning. But right now, though, Peter is talking to us, joining us from Burlington, Vermont in the United States. Peter, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm all right, Peter.
Thank you for having me on your show today to talk a little bit about our research here at Michigan State University regarding electricity issues in across the African countries.
Indeed, Peter. What have you found at the Michigan State University? How are power shortages affecting Africa's development?
Well, it's affecting development in a variety of ways, and I think by just a little bit of background on the project which Michigan State University is involved in, along with a number of other partners on the African continent, have done is a survey called the Afrobarometer Survey. The Afrobarometer Survey is a survey that is done in 36 countries in the last round, and it's a nonpartisan survey that looks at a variety of economic, social, political issues, as well as issues of service delivery and economic development, such as the issues of electricity, which I'll talk about a little bit today. And in fact, in those 36 countries, we've done a total of 54,000 interviews across those 36 countries. So, you know, there may be 1,200 interviews in one country in South Africa, which many of your listeners are most sort of familiar with.
Yeah.
There were 2,400 interviews done there.
All right.
And the main questions that we looked at were, you know, how extensive is the grid, the electricity grid, the infrastructure around electricity in these countries? And also, is the electricity supply, is it getting from the grid, if it's there, to the people? So we asked a variety of questions about that. And I can share some of those results.
Yeah, we'll try and unpack those through the conversation this morning as the key questions and what you have found. But yeah, how serious then is the electricity crisis from the conversations that you've heard in Africa?
So I think it's quite widespread, and I think it it's quite widespread. We see a number of citizens, only 41% of those that were surveyed, for example, say that their electricity works half or more than half of the time. So that's only 41%. So it suggests that for those that have access to electricity, that for many, that electricity is intermittent. And for many, there is not even a connection to the grid. So many Africans are living completely off the grid. And that's one of the significant things we found. We also saw that it varies across different countries. Some mm-hmm. countries have been very good in sort of developing the infrastructure around electricity, and some have not. And as you can imagine, and to your question about effects on sort of economic development and such, a lot of major projects or initiatives that countries are now pursuing, for example, in election issues, the use of biometric technologies in elections, or in terms of education, so the extension of laptop programs for students, particularly in rural areas. A lot of these initiatives, though sounding great and are very important for, the political and development aspect of countries, are really impossible to do when you have this sort of issue of electricity. So it becomes this barrier to, further progress on a variety of other concerns.
And it became very clear then during this research or this program that there are clear disparities between what's happening in urban areas and what's happening in rural areas.
Yes, that's exactly right. And we find, for example, electricity, we can look at it in sort of three different parts. The first part is, whether you have electricity grid in your area. So that's sort of the first part. The second part is, is that electricity grid connected to the household? So the link between the grid to the household. And then the final one, and many South Africans are very interested in that, the third part is, once you're connected to the grid, is that supply reliable over time?
Yeah.
And so it's sort of a three-step process. And as you can imagine, there's a lot of potential for breakdown in any one of those steps, the infrastructural step, the connection to the house, or the, reliable supply. And we find that, for example, electric grid in urban areas is fairly well extended. We find 94% of citizens have the electric grid in their areas, whereas only 45% do in rural areas. And so that's the first step. That's just the first step, the grid. And as I mentioned, you have the connection to the household and then that reliable supply piece as well.
And staying with the grid, which countries in Africa would you say rate lowest in as far as electric grid availability?
So the lowest in terms of extension of the grid would be Burundi and Burkina Faso. And so 17% of those have electricity grid in the area for Burundi, and only 25% in Burkina Faso. So imagine those numbers. On the sort of the top end, you have countries like Mauritius, which is a smaller island country, has 100% coverage, as well as Egypt with 100% coverage.
How is it possible that an island would have 100% coverage?
Yes, it's interesting. In fact, Cape Verde as well, which is another island country which we surveyed, and Sao Tome, Principe, as well, they have fairly high coverage and fairly reliable supply. And I think one of the reasons is that the infrastructural demands that are necessary to extend a grid in a smaller island country are a lot less than, a country such as Mozambique, which is quite large and has many sort of barriers to extending infrastructure. And I should note that South Africa, according to the survey, has a 95% coverage of the grid. So South Africa is definitely on the higher end in terms of grid extension.
And Southern Africa in general, except for Malawi, is quite high up. I mean, over 50% in general.
Yes, that's right. Swaziland, Botswana, South Africa are all in sort of that higher level. But you have other countries like Malawi or Mozambique, which I just mentioned, and Madagascar, all in the SADC region, that are somewhat on that lower end. But you're correct. Most countries in Southern Africa tend to be sort of in the middle or higher end of the countries when we look across all 36.
Now, then the next step is what you mentioned, is whether or not the electricity actually connects to citizen. And it's a very interesting conversation I had the other day that, for example, in Nigeria, that yes, the grid is there, but You will find that from the grid to maybe a house, it's 800 meters, but that house doesn't have electricity. So it's a strange phenomenon.
You're absolutely right, Thabo. In fact, I spent some time in Nigeria myself, and really what you see is the numbers of our survey really come alive. And for example, you mentioned Nigeria, 96% there's connection of the grid, extension of the grid, but only 18% have power more than half of the time. So that's a huge difference. And in Nigeria, for example, individuals really rely and citizens really rely on their own individual generators, their ability to get fuel for those generators. And you can imagine standing in long lines where there's already periods of fuel shortages to fill those generators. But yet, as you just mentioned, the grid coverage in Nigeria is quite good, 96, fairly good. And so this has led to a lot of frustration and a lot of persistent inequities in accessing electricity, because as you can imagine, those who are fairly well off are able to buy a generator, a size generator for their house, can afford the fuel, can afford somebody, for example, to wait in line for them at the petrol station. This creates a number of issues. And so you're right, and Nigeria is one of those big cases, but, Ghana as well, we see that, 87% are sort of connected, but only 58% say more than half of the time. So there are a number of those countries where there's that extension of the grid, but that, reliable supply and connection is not there.
Now, when we speak reliability of supply, as South Africans, we tend to think this is a problem that it's really peculiar to us as South Africa, and we get really upset whenever we've got to. I don't know if you are familiar with the concept of load shedding. Are you familiar with that?
Oh yes. In fact, I was in Johannesburg in 2014, and I was in the Cresta area of Joburg in that neighborhood. And I remember the power went off in that entire section for a number of hours in the load shedding situation that was going on at the time.
Absolutely. You call it blackouts. I guess that's what you call it, huh?
Yeah, exactly. A brownout, or which is a sort of a dimming of power, and then a blackout. Exactly.
Yeah,
you're right, Tom.
Yeah. We get absolutely upset because we are thinking, I guess this is something that is uniquely South African, but it does seem this reliability of supply is a problem across Africa.
It absolutely is. And I think a big parallel to the situation in South Africa is also the high expectations that Ghanaians have about their power supply as a country that's growing tremendously economically, and the demands are growing. And they have a term for this on-off situation, which is called doom sore, which literally means on doom and sore off. And it's this sort of flipping on and off of electricity. And so it's definitely pervasive in South Africa, but elsewhere they're dealing with those challenges, particularly as the economy grows, as population grows, and a number of the long-term strategic plans of these countries don't pan out as they were expected or weren't planned out to begin with. We could talk about some of that the political side as well. But those are some of the major issues for sure.
So am I correct then in saying that the general assumption is that this unreliability of supply is due to development that is happening at a rapid pace, but not supported by the development or infrastructure development of electricity supply? Or is there another reason for this?
I think that's definitely part of it. It's part of this is national planning that countries do. South Africa, for example, engages in an integrated resource plan for electricity. It's a formal plan that is put out that's revised every so 2 years, that looks at the energy portfolio of the country, tries to gauge, how economic growth, population growth, urbanization will influence energy needs. And forecasts are sometimes right, sometimes wrong. And then there are also sort of structural pieces there. And we can talk a little bit about that. But in the South African context, it appears to me, and I'm a political scientist at heart here, there's been some issues, and a number of the political parties in South Africa, say the EFF and the DA, have sort of been very concerned about the national planning that's taking place, around the reliability issue, ESCOM issues and such.
So issues of maintenance of power station is a big issue here that about a decade ago it was reported that we're going to have this kind of situation and that infrastructure was really not maintained because, of course, we had the 2010 World Cup coming and the focus was on actually just making sure that that particular tournament is hosted successfully.
Oh, absolutely. You're right. And a lot of, as you mentioned, a lot of intervening priorities come in there. And, you know, power is something that's really important. It requires maintenance. It requires an updated plan, you know, that addresses various energy needs. And obviously, you know, a lot of these plans become interrupted for various reasons. And in fact, it's interesting to point out, Deloitte did an interesting study on electricity issues, across Africa and looking at the amount of investment that certain regions, and that they report by region, so North Africa, Southern Africa, West Africa, they find that North Africa spends, in terms of contracts, looking across other areas, mining, transport, and others, 75% of contracts in North Africa are focused on power infrastructure. And so it's no sort of, it's not a mystery why we would see very good coverage rates, reliable supply in the North African region, as well as the fact that they're fairly urbanized as well. But when we turn to Southern Africa, we see about 44% are focused on power infrastructure, and even less when we look at Central Africa, 27%, East Africa, 37%. And so you see that across different regions, there's a really different level of prioritization.
Prioritization, yeah. But exactly. Why is it that power infrastructure gets such less focus when providing electricity is such an important thing in all aspects of life? I mean, for example, why is providing electricity so important? Let's talk about that.
I mean, it really, you're absolutely right. I just want to emphasize that. In fact, Afrobarometer, the survey, ask people, what are your most important problems? And 13% of Africans cite electricity as one of their top three problems, so only 13%. In fact, in South Africa, that rank is, you know, in terms of other priorities that are out there, human development, unemployment, housing, crime, security, you know, electricity is seventh in that sort of order. But as you mentioned, electricity is something that enables a lot of these other growth in a lot of these other areas, health. For example, health extension of health infrastructure relies a lot heavily on electricity, housing, electricity, you know, and so, and education, as I mentioned, laptop programs and other things, they rely on electricity. But yet, citizens sort of put that sort of lower down on the list that's there. But at the same time, as you mentioned, electricity is absolutely important for everything. And you think about the rural areas, say in Limpopo province, for example, you know, there are various things that require electricity to run. One thing is your pump, your water pump, for example, and other things such as this. So it can be very basic like that to livelihood, but it could be, and it can be more sort of complex things, you know, laptop programs or other health investments that are there. But it's absolutely there. And I think over time, citizens are going to begin to, you know, realize that extension of some of these other areas requires that a certain baseline of electrification necessary.
Now you refer of its importance in education, and people don't really seem to understand how important it is, especially when it comes to technology in education. Talk to us about how it impacts, education.
Well, I mean, I actually, before I did my PhD, I was actually a teacher at what is about 10 or 12 year olds, so on the younger age. And a lot of the emphasis, you know, in the classroom, and this isn't just here in our country, but abroad in Kenya, they're putting a big reliance on, you know, using technology in the classroom. So engage, that's a variety of things. That's one, accessing the internet resources that are out there for, and the different programming and scholastic programming that can be gained through computer access, through internet access. You have that piece. And a variety of NGOs are involved in that space. They, you know, they go into certain villages, say in Nigeria, for example, and they, you know, they build a local computer to sort of access that. And that is a really an important thing. And I think a lot of different presidents have begun to sort of emphasize, you know, laptops in classrooms and Microsoft as well. developing cheap laptops that can, you know, provide that role. So it's obvious that this can play a really important tool, and it allows students to engage, you know, not only what goes on in their own country, but to see what is being written about, what is being talked about by people their own age across the world. And so when we look at a more international education in our globalizing world, it becomes increasingly important to have that technological component in the classroom.
Absolutely. Let's come now then to the broader implications, too, of a lack of electricity, including how it impacts on elections in Africa.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, my primary work is on elections, election quality, election management. And I've visited several countries, meeting with election commissioners, dealing with election issues. And one of the important things that is being worked on at the AU level, at the African Union level, at the SADC level, is the implementation of technologies around elections. Namibia was one of the first countries to implement last election cycle electronic voting, for example. Nigeria has gone to card readers. Kenya has biometric voting in their voting. And so a lot of technologies, you know, in managing voters' roles and voters' lists, voter identification at the polling station, are requiring technology. And the reason for this is that there's a lot of concern about the quality of elections, the history of malfeasance in elections in many countries. The lack of independence of election commissions is an issue. And one of the big things that NGOs such as National Democratic Institute and others are pushing is ICT in elections, as it's solving some of the issues around trust and election management.
Yes.
And so a lot of that, you know, requires electricity to do. When I was an election observer in Kenya for the Carter Center in 2013, their last presidential election, we noticed in the rural areas that I visited that many laptops weren't being used. They had to go to the manual picture roll because the laptops couldn't charge in schools that did not have reliable electricity. And so this created an air of concern around the election process, the integrity process, that could have been solved by having electricity as one, you know, providing that technological piece that they were trying to implement in their election. So you can see that there's a direct linkage between election issues and electricity problems facing many of the countries.
In a conversation this morning with Peter Penner, University Distinguished Fellow at the Department of Political Science of the University of Michigan State. And we're talking about what lies behind Africa's lack of access to reliable power supply or even unreliable power supply. Give me your thoughts on 0861-987-000. Taking tweets at I am Thabo Mdluli. Also at Power FM 987, if you want to be a part of this conversation. You also refer to, Peter, a similar effort to employ technology in state administration areas being hampered by this lack of electricity.
Yes, absolutely. There are a number of different initiatives. I mean, I've just mentioned elections as one component. But maintaining a lot of records that the state has, court records and other records and other sort of administrative related affairs require that ICT component. And a lot of universities right now in African countries, as well as students that we have here at Michigan State from the African continent, are coming here to do ICT work with the hopes of, you know, coming back home or they are already they're there on the continent to really apply those ICT skills in the public administration element for a variety of areas. And without electricity, obviously, a lot of that push, you know, it frustrates those students who have, you know, studied, you know, the implementation of ICT issues and becomes a bit of a concern for sure. So you're absolutely right. Mm-hmm.
Did you go further as to look at what would be better? In fact, we've just had a conversation now with a professor in the UK around the whole issue of renewable energy versus the nuclear build program and why we are being discouraged to look at the nuclear build program when South Africa happens to be at a position where we've been really, really successful in handling one of our nuclear plants here, which is called Coburg, and why people are just discouraging government from pursuing this. Did you go as far as to determine what would be better in terms of extending the electricity load in Africa?
Well, we've looked a little bit at that area, and obviously emphasizing, you know, diversification of energy sources, I think, is very important. I mean, we don't want to necessarily put all of our eggs in one basket, and different countries have very different energy portfolios that are there. You know, South Africa has nuclear, whereas most countries do not in the African continent. That's one obvious area. But, you know, hydroelectric power and things like this that are being pursued, for example, some joint projects in the SADC region that South African interests are involved in, have the potential to yield some positive growth in the electricity and energy market. In terms of, you know, renewables, in terms of solar and wind and such, I mean, these are good developments in sort of my personal opinion. These are very good developments. But the thing that we need to be very cognizant in is, you know, as we expand the electricity profile, is the distribution of this electricity and reliability of these new renewable sources, are they adequate? You know, people talk about the off-the-grid type of technologies of energy development, you know, not those type of technologies that don't require an extensive electricity grid that can produce, you know, solar power in a given area.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a good move, but we have to make sure that intake of electricity is just as consistent as it would be if you were on the grid and you were maintaining a grid. Because there's a tendency for us to perhaps, you know, set up, you know, certain villages or certain towns with those electricity resources, but that can neglect others and maybe will not be as consistent. So it's something to watch for as this push for renewable energy, you know, begins to take shape.
So am I correct in saying that you found that it would be better for rural areas, the villages, to pursue renewable energy initiatives rather than just extending the grid?
I think it has to be a combination of both. I think extension of the grid should be, you know, first general priority, but we can look into other sort of off the grid technologies. But we have to be very careful that, you know, that the distribution of these off the grid, if we pursue these strategies, are distributed evenly and are just as effective as on the grid strategies. They're not used, for example, for certain leaders to, you know, support certain areas of the country with electricity and not others. Because in many of the more authoritarian context, you know, there's a great potential for this. And that leads to a persistence of inequality in electricity. So we have to really think about the inequality element of electricity when we're thinking about these plans in the portfolio we take.
Another area of interest is the area of support and initiation in terms of these renewable energy. And you suggest that African citizens and states must be equal partners in these innovations in the energy sector.
Yes, absolutely, Thabo. And I'm a firm believer in that. You know, a variety of countries have a variety of partnerships with other countries. Francophone countries have large partnerships with France, for example, in France's energy sector. The United States is getting involved in African power issues through the Power Africa, the USAID approach, which looks at both, you know, public funding and also public-private partnerships that the U.S. is using to engage countries on electricity issues. China is involved somewhat in the electricity area, you know, a variety of others, and could talk more in detail about that. But there are a variety of different players. But the one thing that I think is absolutely key is that the governments and the citizens, and the citizens being those people who are, you know, on the African continent, who are doing degrees in energy management, electricity, infrastructural development, or in the U.S., for example, MSU, these students, you know, when they're going back home, that they are playing an equal part because they have been capacitated to deal with these electricity issues. And we don't want a situation where, you know, it's the external power that's sort of dictating how electricity and energy sector is being arranged, but is in a real partnership with those governments and those people who are in the country, that capacity that's being built. And that's important for the issue of employment. which is, you know, one of the major concerns of South Africans and most Africans, is the issue of unstable unemployment. Mm. And when you have that equal partnership, you allow for people to the potential to be employed in the energy sector and to make a living there. And so that's important. It deals with, you know, two issues, electrification and the issue of unemployment, for example.
Mm, absolutely. No, I fully agree. But now, we mentioned earlier on Cape Verde as well as Mauritius. They're doing well. They're doing so well. Are there lessons that other countries in Africa can learn from them? What are those lessons?
Well, I mean, one lesson would be, I guess, to be a small country. But unfortunately, that's not possible for most to shrink. But I mean, I think that brings up an interesting point. So we have the island countries that are doing fairly well. We also have the Northern African countries, you know, Morocco, Egypt, Algeria, Tunisia, and Cape Verde and Mauritius. Those are sort of the top six countries of a grid extension that I've just listed. Mm-hmm. So you have these, you know, two groups. One thing that's unique about the North African countries is, one, I just mentioned, they put a lot of emphasis on their energy sector, which I think is really good. I think they're thinking it in the right way, so they have that. But they also have another strategic advantage, a geographical advantage to other countries, which is that their populations are highly urbanized. In main cities, Cairo, Tunis, Algiers, a lot of the energy infrastructure is able to be expanded because you got more people in a central area, so you have more urbanized areas. So that makes some of the lessons that we see from the top performers on electricity issues a little bit hard to translate to countries that are like Mozambique, who are, you know, incredibly large country, elongated country, you know, population distributed throughout in several cities. Mm. And it makes it very difficult. But, you know, smaller countries, you know, Liberia, Sierra Leone, I think for some of these countries where, you know, the size of the country isn't so much of an issue, you know, putting a real emphasis on, you know, building that infrastructure has to be absolutely important. And I think there's an obvious connection between the number of those contracts that people are putting in the energy sector and the output. And so that has to be clear and has to be communicated to the public why those energy investments are very important.
That's the role of civil society, you say, I'm saying.
Absolutely. I think civil society is an absolute player in raising the issue of electricity, and they're already doing very good work, you know, in a variety of settings. And governments can also promote this as well, alongside civil society.
So prioritizing then the energy sector, you're saying, and maybe the idea of densification, that's what they talk about, or urbanized populations, and you're saying it's easier than to supply electricity there. But as we wrap it up, what can be done? I mean, we talk about these priorities. What can be done for African continents then to prioritize energy as top of mind in their list?
Well, I think the first thing is investing in one's population, one's citizenry in the energy sector. It starts with when kids are in secondary school, for example, and getting them engaged in science, and science specifically that's related to some of the energy needs of the country. You need to inspire the young people to, you know, pursue this at the higher education. Then it comes to support at the higher education level, because you need that capacity of individuals who are passionate about energy issues and the future of their country to be able to carry that out. So you need that capacity first and foremost, I think. The second thing is, you know, plan. There has to be a cohesive and national-based sort of discussion about electricity needs that's throughout. And what we see in South Africa, that discussion happens, you know, it's sort of ongoing. It happens particularly when there's an issue around reliability of supply. But sometimes, you know, energy issues fall off the political map. They come on at different times. And so they flip on and off. And so there needs to be sort of a constant dialogue that is aimed at designing a plan that is a consensus plan around, you know, a variety of issues. And also, I think the third thing, regional cooperation. Southern Africa in the SADC region is very much interconnected in their energy needs. Botswana, a lot of the more landlocked country, Botswana, Zambia, and others, you know, they require electricity to be, you know, purchased or a variety of different arrangements that are there. And there needs to be some sort of regional cooperation. And obviously, regional integration is an important piece. And energy sector, you know, provides an area where that regional integration can really benefit the region. And so I think the third part is, you know, having a serious regional discussion about energy needs as well.
Peter Panner, he is a distinguished fellow at Michigan State University, joining us on the line. He's with the Department of Political Science, and we're looking at what lies behind Africa's lack of access and unreliable power supplies. Peter, thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Tabo. Have a wonderful morning.
And yourself, have a great one. Yeah, that's it.